Tired of the price of everything going up these days? Groceries, rent, you name it. It's all going up. But not at Metro. They've got your back. Metro has lowered their prices and are giving you a 5-year price guarantee on talk, text, and data. One line? Now 20% lower. Family plans? Also lowered. Oh, and you also get a free 5G phone. All with no ID required and no activation fees. Stop by your neighborhood Metro store, visit metrobytmobile.com, or call to find out about their amazing offers. Bring your number, not available if currently at T-Mobile or with Metro in the past 180 days. Guarantee covers monthly price of on-network talk, text, and 5G data for customers activating on an eligible plan. Exclusions apply. Details at metrobytmobile.com.
Breaking news coming in from Bet365, and it's no surprise. Same game parlay from Bet365 just keeps getting better.
Well, it's even easier to make a bet. Choose from the most popular markets like hits, run line, totals, and home runs. So many to choose from.
Download the app, start building your bet, and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Welcome to The Tool Shed, a podcast covering all levels of professional baseball to help give you the edge in your dynasty leagues. From the MLB draft all the way to the show, The Tool Shed podcast has you covered with rankings, player analysis, and in-depth discussion. And now, here's your host, Eric Cross.
Welcome into another episode of The Tool Shed podcast brought to you by Rotoballer. This is episode 395. Thank you for joining me. I'm your host, Eric Cross. You can find me on Twitter at EricCrossMLB, and the show is at Toolshed Pod. Have a wonderful guest with me in the Toolshed this episode. He is a writer at Fantrax and at Rotoballer, and the co-host of the Fantasy Baseball Beat podcast. One of the best guys around. Great analyst, great father, great human being. My good friend, Mr. Mike Carter. Mike, how you doing, bud?
Eric, great to see you, man. Good to catch up with you as always, and thanks for having me on. A great introduction. I hope that I can live up to any of those standards at some point.
Hey, you've earned it, my man. I said you're great at everything you do. Everyone should check out Mike's work, both written and on the Fantasy Baseball Beat podcast. Great podcast as well. I'll definitely check all of his stuff out. And yeah, it's gonna be fun. It's always fun chatting with you. Always fun chatting baseball, and we get a lot of fun topics here. And you know, the little silver lining to recording Monday night. It's about 8:30 Eastern time right now, as opposed to the usual Sunday night slot. We got a Roman Anthony call up, which we get to sneak in the show that we'll lead off with. So that's a fun little silver lining. But before we get into that, the usual housekeeping. If you enjoy the pod, please rate and review. You can find all of my content either on Rotoballer or over on my Patreon, toolshedfantasy.com. Make sure you check out all the great content over on Rotoballer with Rotoballer's MLB Premium Pass. Gain access to expert tools and advice from proven winners. Import your leagues with TeamSync and get expert advice customized for your league-specific settings. Win more with Rotoballer's lineup assistant tools, free agent finder, prop picks, and the number one DFS lineup optimizer. Our Premium Pass comes with a 100% money-back guarantee. Go to rotoballer.com/radio and use the discount code TOOLSHED to get 10% off at checkout. All right, let's start with some call-ups here. Got obviously the one big one, but a few other pretty sizable ones as well. Been a pretty good week for prospect promotions here. We'll start with the big one, Roman Anthony, finally getting the call this afternoon, Monday afternoon. The news broke of him getting the call to the Red Sox with Willier Abreu, unfortunately, landing on the IL. He was having a pretty solid season, but definitely excited for Roman Anthony to get the call here. 288, 423, 491 slash line in 58 games for Triple A Worcester. 9 doubles, 10 home runs, and 3 steals. Nearly as many walks as strikeouts, 51 walks to 58 strikeouts. Mm-hmm. Pretty much the consensus now that Roki Sasaki has graduated. You know, he was number one for some people. Now pretty much the consensus number one prospect for both, you know, real life list and fantasy focus list here. And Mike, what are your thoughts on Roman Anthony here? Obviously phenomenal talent, but do you think he'll hit the ground running here? What are your long-term thoughts on him?
You know what's funny is that I feel like people have been waiting on him forever. He's 21.
Yeah, I know.
That's the craziest thing about it all to me is the youth here. But they didn't waste any time putting him in right field and batting him fifth tonight, did they? So yeah. I did get to see the first at bat. I was telling you before we started recording. He looks the part. You know, he looks like a guy that belongs. I think that the long-term prospects for him are pretty limitless. You know, the thing that you said that I have always been interested about with him is the walks being equal to the strikeouts. I mean, the guy's just got really great plate discipline. He looks like he's a good hitter. He had a 497-foot grand slam on Saturday night, which was sort of the, I guess, what else do I have to prove here to have you guys call me up? and then it was an oblique injury to Willier Abreu that allowed him to be able to come up. But this is a guy that looks like he's going to hit in the middle of that order for a long time. The Red Sox really don't have any other options, as far as I can tell, while Abreu is out. I mean, unless they really want to run Rob Refsnyder or, you know, Romy Gonzalez or somebody running around out there, I think they're not going to call him up to have him sit. So I'm expecting a relatively long runway for Roman Anthony, and I'm really excited to see him play. I hope that he takes the world by storm.
I think he's going to. Obviously, it's never any guarantee with prospects. We've seen even the surest of prospects struggle. I mean, even look at Christian Campbell's gone through his struggles, Marcelo Meyer so far, just looking at the Red Sox team. But, yeah, I saw a lot of Roman Anthony live last year when he was in AA. And I even noted it both in articles and on here on Toolshed that early in the season, I thought he was just way too passive. He was kind of letting those pitches in the zone. He was kind of just taking those, and then he'd chase a slider or something like that. But, you know, later on the season, you know, like his swing decisions were looking so much better in, you know, July, August, September, as opposed to, you know, April, May, June, which was really encouraging. He could still even be a bit more aggressive. I mean, he's still, you know, fairly on the passive side. That was like one of the things they mentioned. Oh, we want him to do more damage on, what was it, non-fastballs in the zone or whatever, whatever they came up with for their reasoning at the time. And yeah, like the slash line against those pitches wasn't great, but you know, you look at the underlying metrics, they were great on those. He hits everything hard. I mean, he's looking at a 95 mile an hour average exit velocity in AAA, 58% hard hit rate, 20% barrel rate. It was like 30%. It was higher early in the year. It was so good.
He'll be okay.
Yeah, I think he'll be fine.
I think he'll be all right. Yeah,
and he runs a little bit too. I think this could be a guy that's like 30 plus bombs. He'll give you like, you know, the vicinity of 10 steals. Just give you a little something there. Not a burner by any means, but you know, he's a decent runner, decent athlete, and so I think he won't be a zero in the speed department as well, and you know, probably give you a decent average and a great OPP. So yeah, I mean this year, I mean he'll probably have to take his lumps. You know, most rookies do. Yeah, but long term, I mean, he's number one guy for everyone for a reason. So I think this could be a guy that we're drafting, you know, maybe as early as next year as a, you know, early round draft pick and maybe a future fantasy first rounder. That's the upside we're looking at here with Roman Anthony. But few other guys of note getting the call here, including one from Mike's team here, the Chicago White Sox, who is a former Red Sox going over there in the Garrett Crochet deal, you know, in the offseason. Kyle Teal getting the call, you know, three hits his first eight at bat. So off to a nice start here in this first few games. And, you know, he was, you know, I'd make that deal 10 times out of 10. But, you know, when we traded him away, I'm like, you know, White Sox got a really good catcher for a really long time with Kyle Teal. I mean, nothing's like offensively is super flashy, you know, but it's solid contact skills, you know, above average power. And he can run a little bit for a catcher too. He's at 19 steals combined the last 2 years, which is actually 162 games if you combine last year and this year. Doesn't strike out too much. You know, keeps the K rate in check. Walk rate well over 10%. Was slashing 295, 394, 492 with 8 home runs and 7 steals in 50 games this year for Charlotte before getting the call. And as I mentioned, 3 hits in his first 8 at bats there as well. You know, what are your thoughts here on Kyle Teal? Obviously a phenomenal real-life catcher because of the defensive value he adds. But do you think this is a guy that's going to be, you know, maybe a starting caliber fantasy catcher too?
Yeah, I do. I think the interesting thing for me with Teal, you know, obviously you're a Red Sox fan and I'm a White Sox fan. And when that trade got made, I think that's the kind of trade that really helped out both teams. You know, the White Sox got Chase Meidroth right out of that. And if you saw him play in spring training, you knew that the guy was a player. You know, not going to be flashy, but he's going to be a guy that's going to play for you every day. And he's held down shortstop for them. And we've been waiting on Teal for, you know, a couple of weeks now. That there had been some talk that he was coming. Edgar Cuero had gotten the first chance there, and he's held his own. He's hit about 250. He's done okay defensively. But Teal, as you point out, is a better catcher than Cuero is. And so I know Teal also had been taking some reps at first base over the last couple of weeks, where the White Sox have a bit of a black hole right now. They sent Andrew Vaughn down because he was hitting worse than me. And and they brought up Tim Elko, who's not really been much better, but every once in a while pops a home run. So I think there's a nice runway here for Teal. There's some people that have been complaining in Chicago that, you know, oh, we got two really good catchers. Well, what are you going to do with that? I go, well, that's not really a problem. Right. Everybody always needs catchers. Just about every team in the major leagues does. And so they have a good problem to have there. Teal is clearly the better player than Cuero. Cuero might be a little bit better hitter in terms of like batting average, ceiling, and what he brings. But Teal in his first game, Eric, you could see he took a couple of pitches the other way. He got a couple of base hits going the other way. Like, he's got a very professional vibe around him about, like, he knows what to do. He gets on base. He can run a little bit. He seemed really confident and comfortable right off the bat. And the interesting thing is, you know how bad the White Sox have been the last couple of years. Friday night when he got called up, they sold out. They had a 36,000 fans. I didn't think there were that many Sox fans anymore, but there were 36,000 people there for that debut. And then today they also called up Grant Taylor, who could end up being their closer at some point soon. But I really like Teal. The comparisons that I've heard people say is, you know, maybe you got Adley Rutschman light. Maybe 15 home runs, knock in 60 to 70, hit about 275, 280. That's definitely stats that you need behind the plate.
Yeah. No, I absolutely agree. Like, I think you're going to look back, 15 years from now or whenever Teal retires, and you'll be like, yeah, that was a very decent, long major league career. Maybe you won't be, it won't be the super flashy, sexy fantasy stats or anything like that. But I think there's a high floor to be had here. Because even when he struggles, he won't get taken out of the lineup that much just because of how much defensive value he brings. And that was really fun to watch. That's one of the things I love. When you have a catcher that can just whip the ball all around the infield, keep the base runners on their toes, I love that. And that's what he did. The arm is phenomenal. It's like he's going to be a catcher long term. And maybe he plays a little bit of first base too, but this is primarily a catcher. And yeah, I think he's gonna be, I think he could get into like that back end C1 territory, like, a top 10 to 14 catcher or something like that. So, back end C1, maybe a high end C2 in your two catcher formats. I like Teal a lot, and I think he's gonna be definitely a very solid and probably underrated player for a long time for fantasy purposes.
I would agree with you. That's a really nice way to put it.
But let's talk about Cuero real quick, because I had him later on, but let's kind of lump him in here as well. How do you think the White Sox play this long term? I mean, obviously you mentioned some first base opportunities there, and you think Edgar Cuero has, are you intrigued at all by him for fantasy purposes? He's a pretty decent prospect in his own right, and obviously a guy that can get on base with a super high clip. But do you see any value outside of being a second catcher in those formats?
Yeah, I think he could hit. I think his calling card when they got him really was he's going to have to really work on his defense if he wants to play catcher in the major leagues. But this guy is going to hit when he gets there. And so he's even younger than Teal. He's 22. Yeah. And so right now the White Sox don't have a veteran catcher on the roster. They sent down Corey Lee when they called up Teal. So they're going with Teal and Cuero. And it sounds like from what they're saying, it's in a 7-game week. It'll be Teal 4 times. It'll be Cuero 3 times. But the thing I like about Cuero too is that he's also got a very advanced hit tool. This is a player that a lot of people in the system think is a 300 hitter. And so with the fact that they've had really really bad lineups for the last couple of years, they need all the offense that they can get. The problem that they run though is like, okay, so if you Teal DH'd on Sunday. And Cuero caught. So, like, if you do that, then you lose Cuero, all of a sudden you lose the DH for the rest of the game when the other guy's got to come in if you only keep two. So there had been some talk that they were going to keep all three guys, and they decided not to do that for the time being. I think they might end up regretting that. But I think that they're going to find place for Cuero's bat. And the thing is that their designated hitter situation in Chicago is horrible. Like, they're rotating guys like Josh Rojas and Lenin Sosa. Now he's hurt Elko. Miguel Vargas has actually been good. But Cuero, you know, up until the last week or so, he was hitting almost 300. And they're figuring him out a little bit right now. But I think he's going to hit and they'll find a spot for him. I could see a situation where, Cuero ends up getting more of the DH at bats. And they bring Corey Liebeck up to be the backup catcher for Teal and sort of mentor him a little bit, even though he's only like 26, but he's got, 150 games of major league experience now. So he might be somebody that can help them out. I think it's a good problem to have. I mean, as a Sox fan, they've had no offense for like the last three seasons. So getting guys in that can actually hit the baseball and put the ball in play is relatively exciting, even though they're 22 and 44.
Right. And that's still a better pace than last year though. So on the way up at least, but Carroll, I think Carroll's solid. I mean, obviously, he hasn't hit a home run. Yeah. He hasn't really done much, for fun stats yet, but he's hitting 262. He's getting on base at a 343 clip. He's hitting the ball fairly hard. He's got about a 44% hard hit rate, 90 mile an hour average EV, but he has zero barrels because he's been kind of hitting everything into the ground, super low, pull air rate, but above average contact, above average quality of contact, and a solid approach. He's only striking out about 17% of the time with a walk rate a little under 10% at 9.8%. So, yeah, I think there's going to be some value to be had here. Maybe he's a bit limited if he keeps hitting the ball into the ground so much, but I think he's a good hitter, and I think he could definitely maybe not be a top 10 to 15 catcher for fantasy, but I think he could work his way into, being a decent C2 for two catcher formats for sure.
Absolutely. The White Sox are kind of rebuilding their offensive model. Josh Barfield and Brian Bannister were guys that they brought in the offseason to kind of start fixing this farm system situation. Yeah. And what they're doing is they're bringing up guys that hit the ball. The strikeout rates are low. I mean, Cuero's strikeout rate is like 16%. Teal doesn't strike out. Vargas is not striking out right now. So they're looking for a type, it seems like. And I like that. I think that that's how you win baseball games, quite honestly.
Yeah, and it makes me think that, Luis Robert's going to be off this team pretty soon here. Need him to stay healthy for the first part, though. Maybe build up some trade value. Kind of a weird season for him. Let's lump in the other two White Sox guys that we were talking about later right now, and then we'll get back to the prospect promotions after. So I want to talk a little Miguel Vargas and a little Robert, but we'll start with Luis Robert. Really weird season for Luis Robert so far because he's the slash line is terrible, but the power speed blend, he's already got home runs have slowed down, but 5 home runs and 21 steals. I think he's still like fifth or sixth in the majors in steals, but a 177, 265, 281 slash line. K rate's over 30% once again. Walk rate's up though, which is nice to see. He's hitting the ball hard as he always does. He's obviously a good runner, 87th percentile sprint speed. Like the Savant profile is just all over the place. It's a lot of red, a lot of blue. I mean, the guy can't stay on the field, but when he does, we see these flashes of brilliance for a few weeks. I mean, so A, do you think, I think you already kind of alluded to it, but do you think he's going to be traded at some point? And B, like, do you have any confidence that he's still only 27, but do you have any confidence? Like, hey, at some point, I'm still interested in Luis Robert. There's still some talent there. Or at this point, are you just like, I've seen enough. I'm just avoiding him at all costs.
Yeah, it's funny. At the beginning of before the season started, I was in that mode of like, look, this guy, he's going to rebound. The truth about him is somewhere probably in the middle. He's probably not a 38 home run hitter like he was in 23. He's got 20 stolen base potential. Obviously, we've known that for a long time. But the strikeout rate has just been absolutely staggering the last couple of years. And he just doesn't get on base. It's kind of an all or nothing type of profile for him. He gets on base, he runs and he steals. But the thing that drives me crazy about him that's so weird is that he's like 94th percentile for bat speed. Like he swings like a freaking maniac still. And he's just not making contact with anything. And they interviewed him the other day, a couple of weeks ago, I guess it was now, and they were asking him about, hey, is the being up in the air for trade kind of prospect hurting your ability to play? And he goes, if I were another team, I wouldn't take a chance on me right now. Like, he's just really – He's really down. And his body language is such – you know how it is, Eric, with these guys that are gazelles. I mean, I've never known what it's like to be – 6'2", 225 and run like he can run, but he just looks bored. He just looks like he's not interested. I'm sure that's not true. but he just looks that way, and it has driven White Sox fan up the wall. They're all over Twitter. Luis Robert has given up, you know, and like your point, he's only 27. I think if somebody could work with him in a different on a different team and get him to understand, like, hey, you know, let's make more contact, let's less loud contact, more contact, and kind of get back to that guy, you know, that he was starting to kind of be when he started, which was the, hey, this is a guy that's going to hit double-digit home runs and double-digit stolen bases. But, you know, he had years where he hit 284. He had another year where he hit 338. You know, I mean, it's like, it's a guy, the guy should be better than what he is. So for whatever reason, he's not performing. I think it's just a matter of time until they trade him. But now that they're under the gun, because who wants a guy that's hitting 177 unless they think that they can fix that? You know, defensively, he's still outstanding in center field. So, you know, maybe somebody like the Mets thinks he's the missing piece. I don't know. I don't know if that's really going to happen or not. I'm kind of just talking about it. But, yeah, he's definitely going to be on the move. And it's not like they have a replacement for him, you know, handy at all. I think they just want to kind of be done with it. He's kind of become the albatross of the team, and the guy that is sort of like all of our hopes and dreams were pinned on him, and here we are, you know, 2 years later. Now we're looking to get rid of a guy that we should be building around. It's just really kind of sad.
Yeah, and I've always been a big Luis Robert guy. I got him in my home keeper league when he, you know, first, you know, came up, and I've kind of held on to him since then. I'm like, all right, I'll give him another year. I still have him on my roster right now. He's just been riding my bench lately. But I'm done with it. I'm not going to drop him, as I think there's so much talent. It's kind of hard to drop the guy. But, yeah, when keepers come around in this league this offseason, very good chance that I'm not keeping him into next year. But I'm not out by any means, because there's so much talent. And we've seen that talent. It's been very sporadically and not for long periods of time. But, yeah, what if he just needs a change of scenery? Sometimes that's what these guys need. And he gets into an organization that, we see this, let's try, changing this or fixing that. Like, that's all it takes. It's this one person, another org, be like, hey, I'm seeing this, whether it's a swing thing or whatever it is.
Right.
I've heard, obviously the easy rumors, like, oh, the Dodgers, which I would be intrigued by if they were to get them. But
it would be interesting. Yeah.
Yeah. But, I'm not out by any means. I've definitely been fading him and my rankings and whatnot. But, yeah, I think it's too soon and too much talent to be, fully out on Luis Robert. But Miguel Vargas kind of going the other way now. He's starting to finally show some of that promise that we saw when he was with the Dodgers and, one of the, top 25 or so prospects in baseball. Last year, the last 2 years, really, it's been disastrous, both with the Dodgers and the White Sox last year. But this year, the slash line overall, 237, 319, 421 isn't, super, flashy by any means, but that's because he had a rough April, so you kind of were thinking, oh, here we go again. But in May, 263, 333, 556 with 9 doubles and 7 home runs. He's cooled off the last, few games here in June, but a really good May, which is really intriguing. I picked him up in a couple of leagues too, redraft and dynasty, and the metrics are kind of trending up too. Mm-hmm. Barrel rate's around 11%, average EV 89.6, 41.5% hard hit rate, 17% K rate, walk rate just a hair under 10%, and above average contact rates as well, which is kind of what he's always been for the most part. So, Miguel, are you kind of believing that we're starting to see the beginning of a breakout here from Miguel Vargas?
I like him a lot. And he's one of the things that's been kind of fun for him watching him in Chicago has been, there was talk about where he was going to play. And before the season, Will Venable, I always call him Max Venable. You don't remember Max Venable. Max Venable was his dad, who played in the outfield for several major league teams. So I always get confused because I'm old and you're young. So, Will as a player. I know his dad, Max, as a player too. But Venable said before the season that he was going to give Vargas an extended run at third base. And I loved it. And I told anybody who would listen to me, I was like, look, just let this guy play every day. Just let him play. He's got prospect pedigree. The Dodgers don't draft bad players. Everybody that they have turns out to be pretty good, it seems like, in this way. And he was an emblem too, right? Similar to how we were talking about Robert is the symbol of failure as this organization. The early run on Vargas was that was a continued failure, right? I mean, we gave up Michael Kopech and Eric Fetty, and all we got out of this guy is, this trade was a guy that's hitting 150. Well, he's a young guy too. He just turned 25. So, I think about what I was doing when I was 25. It certainly wasn't playing Major League Baseball. Yeah, I was trying to I was trying to figure out what my next steps were going to be. You know what I mean? So long story short, I think they've now moved him over to first base because they've had a need over there. He's willingly done that. The wOBA is going in the right direction. You talked about the walk percentage. Here's another guy that doesn't strike out a lot. You know, he fits that profile. He puts the bat on the baseball. You know, he's close to being in the upper echelon for barrel percentage too, even though he's not quite there yet. So he's hitting the ball hard again, which is what his calling card was when he first came to Chicago. I like him very much. I have him on a few rosters. In fact, on my Tout Wars team, I ended up drafting him on the reserve round because I thought, why not? You know, this guy could end up having an extended run here, and he's done fine so far. I mean, he's got 9 home runs, like you said. He's hitting .237, but the average should be higher. The XBA, which I know is not a great stat, but it's, you know, 12 points higher than what his batting average is right now. So I think we could live with that. And the power seems pretty legit. You know, he's very pull heavy, which is something that he'll probably have to change. But he's hitting the ball harder, and he's doing well. He seems to be enjoying life again. I mean, I didn't really, you know, I don't ever really feel bad for players. I don't know them as human beings, right? But towards the end of the season, you see this guy who just got traded from the best team in baseball to the worst team in baseball, sitting in the dugout, not playing, you know, playing once or twice a week. He was miserable. You just see him sitting there, and it looked like somebody had like run over his dog, you know. Right. I felt so bad for the guy. I'm like, I wish people would just shut up and give the guy a chance. And he's getting a chance now, and I think he's doing well with it so far.
Yeah, I'm sure you saw that picture that was going around social media of him like sitting like the side of the dugout, leaning against the wall, just looking completely defeated, like in so many ways. And yeah, I mean, like you go from, you know, being on the Dodgers where, you know, he wasn't playing that much, but then he goes to a much different situation with what the White Sox were going through last year. So yeah, I mean, then you have to move, you know, halfway across the country and go from one big city to another. There's a lot that goes into these kind of moves for players, but. Yeah, I've always liked the talent, and yeah, I mean, like, it's not huge power, but it's good power with good angles too. Like, you know, he's a little pull happy, but he hits the ball in the air a lot. 72% air rate and a 21.5% pull air rate. He just does not hit the ball on the ground. It's great to see. So maybe he's the type of guy that you could take like 18 to 20 homer power and turn it into like 25 homer power. Something like that. And yeah, I think he's already on, he's kind of on pace for about 25-ish home runs right now, 24, 25, something like that. Yeah, I think, you know, the average is turning the right way. So is the OBP. You know, I don't think he's ever going to be like a top 10 first baseman, but could this be like a good, like, solid corner infield type for your teams? Yeah, I think that's what we're looking at here with Vargas. Yeah, I'm a believer. I don't think he's going to be a stud, but I think he's going to be a solid player. And I think the arrow is pointing up, and he's a good buy right now. I'm believing. And kind of what we're seeing from Miguel Vargas here. All right, so let's get back to the prospect promotions here. We got two more. First one here, Otto Kemp with the Phillies, but unfortunately that was because of Bryce Harper going on the IL. But have you ever seen Otto Kemp's, like, you know, the picture on BREF? He looks like he could be like brothers or like cousins with Bryce Harper. Like, same facial structure, got the mustache going on.
Oh yeah,
kind of looks like he could be like sitting around the same table at Thanksgiving at least, you know, like cousins or something. But
Right. That's so funny. That's so true.
I just literally just saw it now. I was like, oh, hey, he kind of looks like Bryce Harper a little bit. But, you know, Kemp was having a really good season in AAA in 58 games, 19 doubles, 14 home runs. I think he was tied for like fourth or fifth in the minor leagues in extra base hits so far. 11 steals as well. Kind of a guy that's not really super quick, but kind of a smart base runner and can give you a bag here and there. With a 313, 416, 594 slash line. He's a guy where, you know, I'm a bit cautious with him. I mean, I put him top 100 in my last update for prospects, and he hits the ball hard. He's got a 14% barrel rate, AAA, hard hit rate, 46%, average EV, about 91 miles an hour. Mm-hmm. But it was below average, both in zone and overall contact. So a little bit of an issue there. I kind of wonder if that gets exposed by major league pitching. And he's probably only up for as long as Harper's out, but the power is absolutely legit here. So what are your thoughts on Otto Kemp? And, you know, are you intrigued by him long-term for fantasy?
What interested me was hearing what Rob Thompson said about him over the weekend when they asked him how he was going to use Kemp. You know, they were insinuating that they were going to use him at third base and put Bohm over at first base while Harper was out. And then he volunteered You know, managers never volunteer information. So he volunteered that, you know, well, we also have some problems in the outfield. And the problems that they've had in the outfield is that they don't have anybody being productive in the outfield.
Right.
You know, so, you know, they're running platoons with, you know, Kepler and Rojas and Sosa. Sosa played left field one time. I don't know if you saw that. It was like he was on roller skates. Probably not the best option out there. And Brandon Marsh, you know, so like they're running these guys out there that are pretty mediocre. So while you're right in saying like Kemp might only be here for a little while until Harper is back, if he hits, he might be able to have an extended time here because of the fact that their outfield is so bad that he might actually get some time in left field, they said as well. So I think they're looking at options there. I think the Phillies are definitely going to be looking to be in the market for an outfield upgrade. Luis Robert, anyone?
That'd be a good fit, yeah.
Yeah, well, they have a few guys there that could help us out if they want to send them back our way, you know, minor league prospects and whatnot. But, I think it'll be interesting to see how that goes because they, too, for as good a team as they are, they've got some holes. And so, you know, maybe Kemp sticks around a little bit if he hits.
Yeah, no, I could totally see that. Yeah, left field is Kepler against righties and Weston Wilson against lefties.
Oh, God.
Center field's platoon, same thing, ready lefty with Brandon Marsh and Johan Rojas. So, yeah, I want to know what the combined like OPS is for those four guys. But I mean, the only one that's kind of like a staple out there is in right field with Nick Castellanos. But yeah, I mean, and if he were to get extended run, obviously this is a good lineup. You know, it's one of the better lineups all around in baseball. Even hitting eighth, I mean, two guys behind you, then you get back to the top, but you got Stott and Turner and Schwarber and Harper when he gets back. So yeah, I like. Long term, I think he could be like one of those, maybe he's a 240, 250 hit or something like that, but maybe it's 25 bombs over a full season. I mean, I think he could be one of those types. Maybe like, and that's kind of what I call like the Rhys Hoskins profile, where it's like, the average won't be great, but it won't kill you either. It's not going to be like dipping like 210 or something like that. Not like, Joe Adell or something like that, or some of these guys that really kill you in the average department. It'll be fine. It won't kill you. And then, the power will kind of make up for it a little bit. So, yeah, I think he's one of those older prospects. He's 25, almost 26. Right. Kind of gets, anything above, 23 is considered just, ancient for prospects these days. They kind of get overlooked a lot. Yeah, they get overlooked a lot. And, is he 26 yet? No, he'll be 26 in September.
Not quite.
So. Yeah, almost there. But
Soon enough. Yep. I wish I was 26.
Me too. Feels like
or 36 or 46 or any of those. That would all be fine.
So Otto Kemp, I think he's going to be a pretty solid hitter here. Not a stud, not like a top 10 corner infielder, but maybe a guy could be a sneaky power source long-term for sure. One more here. We got Ryan Ritter with the Colorado Rockies, who might have been the hottest hitter in the minor leagues in the month of May. I mean, every time I was looking at, the previous day's guys, it was like, oh, another, three hits for Ryan Ritter, another two home runs, something like that. He's been up. He's 3-for-12 so far in his first few games with the Rockies, but a guy that had 13 doubles and 16 home runs in 52 games with a 305, 413, 635 slash line. And here, I want to pull up his May numbers here because a lot of that damage was in May. So it was just a phenomenal May. Yeah, he hit 381, 445, 918. In May with 10 doubles and 12 home runs in 24 games. So he had 25 extra base hits in 24 games. So over an extra base hit per game and a home run on average every second game. This year he's been, much better in terms of making contact. The approach has gotten better. He's always had that kind of little fun power speed blend, but it's really becoming a much better hitter this year. And he's also kind of, always 24, but a 24-year-old power hitting middle infielder playing half his games in Colorado. There's definitely some intrigue there, Mike, for sure.
Yeah, definitely. I think, this is, again, a team that's the worst team in baseball, right? So there's no reason for them not to try to give a young guy some run. Now, Ezekiel Tovar obviously has been their starter for the last couple of years when he's been healthy, but he's hurt again with a strained oblique. They've got Orlando Arcia for reasons I don't fully understand on their bench. backing him up. And so I think Ritter will get some action there. I think he has room for an extended run. I think you're spot on with what you said. His AAA numbers And this is a guy that is known for being having good power. Scouts really seem to kind of feel that he's going to struggle to hit breaking balls and hit the slider. And so far, I know it's been a very, very limited sample size, but he struck out almost 40% of the time. So that's definitely going to be something that he's going to have to work on and work through that. He's considered to be an above average shortstop too, I believe, as well, defensively. So we'll have to see how that plays out. But you know, with the Rockies, God, you just never know. I mean, you know, they do such crazy things, like have Orlando Arcia, and then, you know, Tyro Estrada is like their big free agent acquisition. You're like, what are you guys doing? Just let these guys play. So Ritter was hitting second, though, in the first couple of lineups that he was in, which had me a little bit intrigued, too, from the standpoint of being able to score some runs and pop some home runs. The Rockies will hit home runs, for those of you who are listening. I mean, they've got Hunter Goodman. They've got Doyle. They've got Jordan Beck. I mean, there's not a lot of stuff in between there, but they're going to hit some home runs, that's for sure.
Yeah, no, yeah, he's hitting second right between Beck and Goodman, who's been in that three spot now. And then they go Tyro Estrada's cleanup hitter, which is interesting. But but yeah, it's the Rockies. I don't even know what's going on there. Very weird franchise right now. But yeah, I mean, they're starting to bring up some of these guys. I mean, they gave Adiel Amador a look. He didn't really, you know, do well, but you know, they brought up Jordan Beck. They've given Zach Veen a little shot here. And they've brought up Chase Dolander in the rotation. So they're starting to give, you know, some of their younger prospects here some run. And Ritter, I feel like he's going to be a guy, you know, kind of similar to what I was saying with Otto Kemp, where, you know, the power is definitely, it's a power over hit profile. He was running a contact rate right around 70% with a below average zone. I think the zone's around 79%. But it's above average power. I mean, he was running pretty good quality of contact metrics in AAA. It was about a 42% hard hit rate, 13% barrel rate, a decent runner as well. So definitely provide value. It could be like a 2010 type of guy if everything kind of clicks for him, but maybe it's a little bit of a lower average. He kind of gives me a little bit of like infield Jordan Beck vibes. I think there's a little bit more upside with Jordan Beck, but I think they could be like similar type of profiles where it's like, all right, there's a decent power speed blend here. Maybe the average and the OBP aren't like great, but yeah, I think he should get some run. Maybe he can play, you know, he's played some second base too. So it'll be really interesting to see once, you know, Tovar's back in, I don't know how long he's going to be out, a few weeks or something like that. These obliques are obviously, you know, kind of hard to you know, pinpoint how when these guys are going to be back. But do they give Ritter, if he's hitting well, do they move him over to second base and, you know, over Tyro Estrada? Kind of be fun to see how that plays out. But yeah, definitely some intrigue here for where both Kemp and Ritter. I think they, you know, if they get some run, they could have some sneaky value for fantasy purposes. Mm-hmm. They definitely have the profile to provide value. We'll see if the hit tool for both these guys will be, you know, huge. See if they make enough contact, keep the K rate in check. Now, those would be, you know, two huge things for both Ritter and Otto Kemp.
Message and data rates may apply. Reply stop to opt out. Consult a doctor prior to use.
You look amazing. What have you been doing?
You've heard of Ozempic, Wegovy, and other GLP-1 medications, right? Well, if you qualify, Zelday providers can prescribe semaglutide, the same active ingredient, at up to 90% less without insurance. Done all online.
No wait at the doctor's office or pharmacy?
No wait. Zelday can ship the same active ingredients as other expensive GLP-1s to your door.
Get started with Zelthy today for just $39. Call #250 and say keyword care. That's the same active ingredients in Wegovy or Ozempic, but for 80 to 90% less. That's #250 keyword care.
You have 5 new messages.
Hey, Carl, it's Jen from Finance. Could you submit your expenses this week?
Hey, Carl, happy Friday. It's Jen, Finance. Just need those receipts today. Me again, Carl. Really need those receipts, like last week. Please just tell me where they are. Are you by your desk right now?
Finance teams, you shouldn't be chasing down Carl or anyone else. With Ramp, expenses are sent with a text and reminders happen automatically. Switch your business to ramp.com today and love finance again.
Breaking news, and this one is almost unbelievable.
Yeah, it's all about new customers at Bet365 because they get $150 in bonus bets when they bet $5, win or lose. And even better, bonus bets can be used on the spread, totals, and player props.
There you have it. Bet $5 to get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. And see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. T&Cs apply. Available in app only.
But yeah, some fun promotions this week. We got some other non-promotion guys to talk about. I already talked about the White Sox guys, but you know, we get the return today of Yuri Perez after, I think it was, what, 20 months, I believe it was, since he last pitched in a game. And this guy was, you know, the rookie that everyone wanted back in 2023. And I think like that should still be the case. Like, I still have Yuri Perez as a top, I think I had him either 10th or 11th in my dynasty starting pitcher rankings, like for a reason, because that's how good the talent is here. Mm-hmm. And he came back tonight. I mean, he gave up 4 runs in 3 innings, 2 walks, 5 Ks. I really don't care. It was his first start back after 20 months. Like, you know, he gets the Pirates, whatever. I mean, he probably should have dominated them, but I'm not really kind of looking at that stat line whatsoever. You know, he was hitting 100. He was striking out guys on 100 mile an hour fastball. The average fastball velocity in this one was 97.5. He's got that cutter in the mid to upper 80s, sinker, curveball, slider. I mean, the two breaking balls are really, really good. The cutter's become really, really good as well. Mm-hmm. I mean, the upside is like this guy could get up to, you know, maybe not quite, you know, Skeen Scooble level, but could, I think he could get right in that second tier where it's like, all right, Crochet, Hunter Brown, Logan Gilbert, kind of that tier where he's, you know, anywhere from SP3 to SP6 or 7 or something like that. I mean, this all the talent in the world. And he's still only, I think he's still only 22.
Or maybe, he's 22.
I think he's still only 22. It's like this guy is still so, like, he debuted at 20, so insanely young, so much upside. Like, this guy, I'd buy. The price is probably getting higher, obviously, because he's back, but I'd buy because I think it's only going to go up from here. I think this is going to be a guy that's going to be, as long as he can stay healthy, a stud for a long time. But what are your thoughts on Yuri Perez here, Mike?
Yeah, I'm so glad that he's back. I mean, it seems like we've been waiting for a really long time for that. And, you know, fantasy players, we are a fickle bunch. You know, the what have you done for me lately kind of thing interferes with our judgment sometimes. And I love what you said, Eric, about him being in that second tier, maybe, you know, that Logan Gilbert, Garrett Crochet tier, where maybe he's not a Skeens or a Scooble, but he's like one B to those 1A guys.
Yeah.
People forget how good he was before he went down.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, yes. as a 20 year old, he started 19 games through 91 innings. He had 108 strikeouts, a 3.15 ERA, and a 1.19 WHIP. I mean, as a 20 year old, are you kidding? Like, that is just phenomenal. You know, you look at his stat cast, like you were just talking about, blood red. When you see it, and tonight, who cares about the results? Let's worry about the process. This is definitely a guy that we should be rostering, and if we can still get him, this would be a really great guy getting into now. Probably he's going to be a little bit limited on that if you can get him.
Yeah, and they can even go a little bit further on his rookie season. As a 20-year-old, the arsenal was a little different back then. I mean, he's added the cutter since then. He didn't really throw the changeup at all in this one. So back then, he was like your typical four-seam changeup, slider, curveball guy. And all three of those secondaries had a whiff rate above 45%. That's insane at any age, at any experience level. But to do so as a 20-year-old rookie, and he was a guy that, you know, people know me. I know I love this. He threw all four of those to both righties and lefties. Like, you have to be geared up for any of those pitches at any time. He can go to any of those pitches to get strikeouts. So, and the fastball was 97.5. It's still 97.5. So that velocity is back. And yeah, he's so damn good. And I'm just really excited that he's back. So yeah, buy high on Yuri Perez, because again, I think the price tag is only going to go up from here. He is a stud. Next guy here. Was supposed to be a stud. He's another guy. It's almost like him and and Luis Robert. It's like I don't know what I want to do with these guys. I mean, they're still really fun profiles, but it's like almost like the red flags outweigh the green flags at this point. And that's Royce Lewis with the Minnesota Twins. Guy that's still only 26 years old. I think he's been around forever because he was drafted 8 years ago, so it feels like he has been. Still only 26 years old, and we've seen. You know, we all remember all the grand slams a couple of years ago when he came back, but can't stay on the field. He hasn't surpassed 325 plate appearances yet in a season. I mean, he's still young, but he's had, you know, the knee injuries plus was an oblique plus a shoulder, right? It's just so many. It's hard to keep track of them all. at this point. And then this year, 98 plate appearances since returning, 184, 276, 264 slash line. You know, metrics are, I mean, he's still hitting the ball fairly hard, not striking out. He's actually, he's walking at a career high clip. So like under the hood, it still looks pretty decent. Contact skills are, you know, actually right in the vicinity of league average, both in zone and overall. Doesn't really chase too much. So it's not like any super concerning metrics right now for Royce Lewis, but this is not coming together. And then you kind of wonder, can he ever stay healthy? The Twins, they can develop guys, but they can't keep them healthy. Mm-hmm. Like both, you know, obviously they're two top prospects, Walker Jenkins, Emmanuel Rodriguez. They're having a hard time staying healthy. You know, obviously, we know Carlos Correa, Royce Lewis, Byron Buxton, you know, poster boy for this team in their injury history. So I kind of wonder, is Royce Lewis ever going to be a thing? I don't know. Do you still have confidence in Royce Lewis, Mike, or are you starting to kind of fade him at this point?
Now, I think in dynasty leagues, he's somebody that I would try to buy low on at this point. You know, if he was available to me, if somebody was frustrated with him in redraft, he's probably pretty safe to ignore right now. I think the question that I've always had about Royce Lewis, Eric, and you're more of a student of this than I am, is I've always wondered what it is that he does well when it comes to hitting. Like he doesn't have a ton of power. The 2 years ago, he hit for a good average and was hitting the ball really hard. It seemed, you know, and having some good results with that, but I need a little more juice out of my third baseman. You know, yeah. I'm a boring drafter when it comes to that kind of stuff. I mean, give me Austin Riley all day if you want to get into me. You know, that I'm great with that, and I don't worry about it. For too long, I tried to, you know, nickel and dime my way through third base on a lot of teams, and it just doesn't work. And so, for the question for me with Royce Lewis and why I was sort of avoiding him is not that I don't think he has talent, but I just don't know what am I going to get. Because if I'm going to get 15 home runs, then maybe I'll just take Alec Bohm. You know what I mean? Like I don't know. Like I just don't see like that power surge, like that 30 home run power. I just haven't seen that. And you're right. The underlying metrics, the stuff that you want to see that's red, he's got those, you know? So like, And he is hitting for a higher average this month. I think he's hitting .389 in June so far, but there's no power. He's got one home run all season. So it's something that's concerning. I, you know, he should be better than what he is. And so I think it depends on your league format. If you're in Dynasty and you have a spot and on your bench and you can kind of wait and see what happens, go for it. Obviously, I think in anything but the deepest leagues, he's not rosterable at this point.
Yeah. I just, again, there's like a handful of players that I just have a really hard time ranking and valuing right now. And he's definitely, I mean, Robert is one. He's definitely one as well. You know, Joe Adell is another one. I never know how I want to feel with Joe Adell. But yeah, Royce Lewis, like he's one where, like you mentioned, like the power has never been like great. It's been okay. It's not like bad power. It's not good, but it's okay. You look at quality of contact, it's been like right around league average, give or take. You know, barrel rates have always been a little bit higher because he's really relied on hitting the ball at the ideal angles, you know, pulling it, getting it in the air. That hasn't been happening this year. I mean, last year he had a 29% pull air rate. It's down to 9.7%. It's basically been cut by it's actually been cut by a third exactly, down to 9.7%. Yeah, and he's just not pulling the ball as much either. Pull rate last year, 46.6%. This year, 26.4%. He's been going to center field a lot this year, almost half the time. So yeah, it's really weird. Like he's still, you know, he's still got the power in there, but since, you know, all these injuries, he hasn't run. Like he has zero steals the last 2 years. So if you're not providing at least some speed, then all right, I need the bat to stand out. And can the bat stand out both in terms of hitting for average and power? And can you stay on the field long enough to do that? So a lot of ifs there. Like all right, maybe it can all click, but I think that's certainly become a lower likelihood outcome. And maybe he's one of those guys where it's like, all right, he's going to be fun for a month here and there, but for the most part, you're probably going to be pretty underwhelmed with the end of season numbers with him or how much he played that season. Mm-hmm. So I guess I can't be out on Royce Lewis, but I don't know if I really want him on any league. Like I've been burned by this profile and the durability issue guys before. So I kind of lean towards just not going after these guys because usually you just end up getting hurt, no pun intended, by rostering these guys. So I don't know. I mean, he's just a tough one to convince myself to go after. It's like same with Robert at this point. Like, can they even stay healthy? That's, you know, that's like the sixth tool. Can you stay on the field enough to show your other five actual tools? That's the big question here with Royce Lewis. I don't know. It's tough. But you know, a couple more names here. We got three more, a couple of pitchers here too. We haven't really talked a lot of pitching in this episode. But one guy that's been kind of taking the league by storm here, kind of out of, not out of nowhere, but definitely was not expected him to be this good this early. That's Noah Cameron with the Kansas City Royals. First five starts for Cameron, 0.85 ERA and a 0.79 whip. Not really striking out at much, guys. Only 19 Ks and 31 and two-thirds inning. But he was a decent K-rate guy in the minor leagues. Obviously, I mean, this is not sustainable. I mean, I don't think anybody thinks this is sustainable with Noah Cameron. But Kansas City has a good track record with pitchers, especially the last, you know, 5-6 years or so. They've become a really good place to develop pitching, and they've shown that with having a pretty good rotation right now overall. So look Cole Reagans, what he's done since he got to Kansas City, and kind of what they've done with some of their veteran guys too. Obviously, they whiffed Asa Lacy, but you know, Noah Cameron is looking really good, 25 years old. Now, what it's obviously, again, we're not saying that he's sustain this, but what do you think we see from Noah Cameron? Like, you know, long term, top 50 pitcher, top 75, kind of where are you feeling for Noah Cameron?
Well, the thing that I think I like about Cameron, and you know, I watch a lot of MLB games late night, and I saw him pitch last week a little bit, and he really seems, I know it's a cliche, but he seems like he's got a really good feel for it. Even though the stuff doesn't look like it's overwhelming, he's getting people out. I mean, he doesn't give up barrels at all. You know, the ball's not getting hit very hard off of him in most places. He doesn't have a high strikeout rate, like you said, but he also is not hurting himself with walks. So that 0.85 ERA is going to normalize at some point. But the Royals believe enough in him that they're going to keep a six-man rotation for the time period, it looks like. Reagans is scheduled to be back this week. And I think a lot of people were wondering what was going to happen when they got Reagans and Lugo back. And it looks like Reagans is going to pitch this weekend against Oakland. Oh, it's not Oakland anymore. The Athletics, I should say. But Cameron's going to pitch tomorrow against the Yankees. And that could be an interesting thing to watch and see how he stacks up against those guys. But, there, you know, could Michael Lorenzen be the odd man out here if they decide to go to a five-man rotation again? He's not listed as having a start here in the next week, Lorenzen. So it'll be interesting to see how that plays out. But Cameron definitely – I wrote about him in my Rotoballer article 2 weeks ago as somebody that was coming in, getting outs, eating innings, and obviously not getting a lot of strikeouts, but incredibly helpful with the ratios right now. So definitely a guy that is on my radar and somebody that I'll be watching. I think if he takes a step forward, you know, maybe he's a top 50 guy, but he's also not super young, which has been sort of a theme that we've had tonight. I think he's almost 26. And so when we look at him, you know, maybe that 75 to 100 slot for starting pitchers. But you're right. Kansas City does a good job of developing these guys and working with them on what you need to do to be able to be successful at the major league level. So maybe he does get some way to stick here. I think a lot of people, me included, thought Cameron was going to get sent down when Lugo and Reagans were back. But here we are, and they have a six-man rotation this week.
Yeah, I almost wonder like, if he wasn't pitching this well, like, would he be, even if he was pitching like decently, like, you know, I guess let's take a 3.5 ERA, I think he probably would have been sent back down. But this is a guy that has made five starts, and he's gone at least six innings in all five starts. He has six quality starts to start his career. Or enough, it should be five quality starts to start his career. That's pretty damn good. I mean, some guys don't even have five quality starts all season. He has five, you know, in his first five career starts. But yeah, I mean, he has, outside of his, you know, he had five walks in his first outing, but since then, only six walks combined in the last four. You know, it's been three strikeouts or fewer in four of the five. Then he had eight randomly against the Twins. You know, the Twins always seem to strike out a little bit there. But, yeah, I think Cameron's fine. When he was coming up, you know, I always kind of – I probably wrote about this too. Like, he just screamed like number four starter. Like, not number five, but, like, I think he's a little better than a number five, but not even like a number, you know, one, two, three type of guy.
Yeah.
I get decent number four guy, give you some innings and kind of keep everything in check. You know, never have not really have the big blow ups too frequently. But yeah, I think the upside is limited. So I'd probably say like back in top 100, but you know, those guys are, you know, they provide value too. And you got to have some stability. You can't always go after the super flashy guys every single time, it will burn you. But yeah, I think Noah Cameron's a decent kind of back end arm for your roster for sure. All right, two more here, both from the Chicago Cubs. gotta stick a reliever in here talking with Mike Carter. Always does a lot of good work. always with everything, but you know, he's done a lot of work with relief pitchers over the years. You know, Daniel Palencia with the Chicago Cubs here, kind of taking the relief pitcher world by storm over the last couple of weeks, grabbing five saves. I think he got like five saves in like 10 or 11 days, I believe it was. You know, 1.64 ERA in 20 appearances, 0.82 WHIP, 28.9% K rate to a 9.6% walk rate. I mean, this is a guy that was pretty bad last year, six ERA above six. So kind of, you know, did pretty much come out of nowhere in terms of like, hey, this guy is now pretty damn good. You know, are you believing in what we're seeing from Palencia, and do you think he can kind of run with the closer role long term there in Chicago?
The thing that's really interesting about what you just said is that last year there was a segment of us that were talking about him when we were down in Arizona for first pitch. So the usual suspects, Rick Graham, you know, Doug Dennis, Greg Jewett, the dean of relief pitching, I would say. Right? And we all talked about Palencia, and we're like, walking people, he would probably be okay. Because last year he had a walk rate of like, I forget, it was like 17-18% or something like that. And the strikeout rate was way less. And so he, to your point, he wasn't very good, but the guy can throw the ball through the wall. I mean, there's no doubt about it. So he's got some good stuff going on there. And if you look at this team, it's really interesting to look at the Cubs bullpen if you've not done it. Because you look at it and you're going, these guys are playing really well, and their top setup guys are Brad Keller and Drew Pomeranz. And you're like, how are they doing this? Like, how does this work? But to your point, Eric, they don't really have anybody else to go to right now. I mean, Porter Hodge is out. I know a lot of people like him and think that he would be the closer, but he's got a strained oblique. And I'll tell you this, and I know you and I have talked about this before. Porter Hodge just has a weird fastball. It just doesn't – I just don't know how that's going to work for him long. And so I think Palencia is the guy. I think the Cubs will probably look to upgrade that situation, if they stay in the playoff race, which they should. But Palencia has been a pleasant surprise for them. Definitely a guy that has looked different this year than what he did last year in terms of what he's doing and how he's kind of going about, you know, getting people out. The strikeouts are back, and the walks are way, way down for him, which is – been the key component so far. So I guess we'll have to see what happens there. But I think, you know, for now, up until the trade deadline, it'll be.
Yeah. I wonder if, you know, if the Red Sox continue to fall out of it, maybe they go Chapman reunion there in Chicago. We'll see. But Palencia, really fun arm though. You mentioned he throws super, super hard, 99.3 mile an hour average on the fastball there, which he throws about 73% of the time, 127 batting average against, 218 slug on that pitch. Only given up two extra base hits on it all season, a triple and a home run. And then the slider, you know, he uses 21% of the time. It's a pretty good offering as well, mixes in the occasional sinker, splitter, curveball, but primarily that fastball slider mix, with the fastball being nearly three quarters of the time. So when you're throwing a pitch three quarters of the time, that's a 127 batting average against. Yeah, I think you're going to have some pretty good success there. I'm intrigued for sure. I mean, I don't know, like you said, I don't know, like, does he get the chance to keep it long-term? I mean, he's kind of filling in now because the Presley experiment didn't work out. Hodge is hurt. Those like the two guys they're looking at to kind of anchor that eighth and ninth inning in some way. So maybe it's like, all right, hey, thanks, dude. You kind of stepped up now, but we're going to go out and get, you know, this veteran guy, Chapman, whoever it ends up being at the trade deadline. So I kind of agree with you there. I do think that that'll be the case, and they'll move him back into more of a setup capacity. But I mean, this could be a guy like in a saves any yes. league that values holds, whether it be straight up saves holds or any of the variations that they have over on Fantrax. Yeah, I think he's gonna be a guy that's gonna have a good amount of value there. And yeah, I think you mentioned that walk rate's been basically nearly cut in half from last year. K rate's gone up too. Yeah, I think there's a lot of legitimacy here in what's happening with Daniel Palencia for sure.
But you know what the Cubs are going to do. You know what the Cubs are going to do, though, don't you?
What's that?
They're gonna do something crazy. They're gonna do something like Palencia will run another five or six saves off, and everybody will think he's the guy. And then they're gonna trade for like Kenley Jansen or something. Just watch. And then if that happens, if that happens, bring me back on and I'll be like, see, I got something right finally.
I can totally see that. But you know who I think would actually is the best option for closer for them? It's someone that's in-house right now. I think it's Ben Brown. I know he's starting right now.
I do too.
But I think Ben Brown could be, like, he is, you know, primarily he's four-seamer and that knuckle curve. That knuckle curve is really, really good. Four-seamer, 90, about 95, 96, you know, catch a little bit higher. I think he would really flourish. I mean, right now, he's a guy that can miss bats. The walk rate's actually been pretty solid, but just doesn't have the deep arsenal to start. So I wonder, you know, if they eventually scrap the whole Ben Brown starting thing. If they do, I think he could be a really good kind of closer. So it'd be fun to see if they end up going road at some point, whether it's this year, offseason, whatever. That's kind of one
of them. I totally agree with you. I love that idea. And Rick Graham and I were talking about that in Arizona too, about like, man, I would love to see Ben Brown close or like be a two inning stopper. He would just be phenomenal.
Yeah. You figure if he's averaging, 95.6 on the four seamer now in the starting role, you got to imagine that's probably going to tick up to like 97, 97 and a half, something like that. If he's only going, you know, an inning,
easily
15, 20 pitches, something like that. So you get 97, 98 with that knuckle curve in the mid 80s. You know, that's going to be a really fun combination. So we'll see how that kind of plays out. But last one here, going over to the offensive side for the Cubs, Matt Shaw, who's been hitting much better since returning. You know, he came earlier in the year, struggled since coming back, like in 43 plate appearances in May. He's hitting .359 with a .419 OBP, .269 so far in June, but only one home run since returning, only two for the season. And it's kind of weird. Like, it's great that he's hitting for average and getting on base and all that. Quality of contact has actually been terrible. I mean, he's among the worst in the league in both average exit velocity, which is 82.7 miles an hour, and hard hit rate 24.5%. I think he actually is the lowest. I looked the other day, he was the lowest or second lowest. I think Sal Frelick was down there too with him, but it's not hitting the ball hard, and it's weird. You know, he's never been like a huge power guy, but he's always shown like average to a tick above average power. That's just completely gone right now. But everything else looks pretty good. You know, walk rate's 10%, K rate's 21%, and he's running a, you know, pretty solid contact rate since coming back too. So everything else is kind of there. You know, he's a good runner too, 89th percentile runner too. He's got seven steals so far, but the power's just completely gone right now. I don't know. What are you kind of making of the profile and the early kind of returns here from Matt Shaw?
It's very confusing, isn't it? I mean, you know, the Cubs essentially handed him this position gift wrapped in spring training, and then he didn't get off to the start that anybody was envisioning. They sent him down, and to your point, he's come back and the batting average has been pretty good, but there's a total lack of power. He does steal bases, like you said, from time to time. He's got seven on the year, and I think five of those were last month. So, you know, he's productive in that route, but you know, a lot of people I think look at him and say, "Ooh, I like that eligibility. He's got second base, you know, shortstop and third base eligibility in a lot of leagues." And so I think a lot of people were willing to take a chance on him early on, thinking maybe this will be a double-digit home run, double-digit steal guy. Right now, it doesn't look like he's going to be a double-digit home run guy. But, you know, he's right where he's supposed to be in terms of batting average, right, what they would expect. So he's at .256 right now. I think he's probably better than that. He's also 23 and a young guy. I do think the Cubs are going to probably try to upgrade this position as well. I'm not saying that Shaw doesn't have a future, because I think he does have a future. I think it's probably a bright one. But if they're going to be serious in the playoffs, they're going to have somebody performing at third base. They had Itzhak Paredes, but you know, they traded him for Kyle Tucker, which I guess is probably a pretty good trade overall. Can't complain about it too much. But it's interesting on that Cubs lineup though, because Matt Shaw and Nico Hoerner are complete zeros in power right now. Nico Hoerner literally has no home runs. So it's really interesting to kind of see what's going on there and try to look under the hood and see what's going on. But he just doesn't hit the ball that hard. You know, it's kind of a weird profile. It's hard to know what to make out of it. He can run, like you said. And because they really don't have another option there, you know, he's going to play. But it would not surprise me. And I don't know who would be available. I'm not even speculating on names at this point. But the Cubs could really use some bullpen help, and they could probably use a third baseman.
Yeah, no, I can see that for sure. It kind of prove your point here. I think everyone's kind of considered like Nico Hoerner always to be obviously a very minimal power guy. I mean, what's he have career? 29 home runs over seven seasons, nearly 2,500 play appearances. So yeah, that doesn't get you a lot of home runs. He has better hard hit rate and average EV right now than Matt Shaw by about 4 miles an hour on the average EV. So yeah, that's kind of proves or just shows how kind of poor the quality of contact is for Matt Shaw. I mean, I'm not hitting the panic button with Shaw's power. I mean, maybe he's more of just a 15 to 18 homer guy than a 20 plus homer guy. But I don't think he's going to be like single digit home runs. Like, I'm not ready to say that with Matt Shaw yet. So, maybe that does limit his overall upside. Maybe he's more like a 15-15 type, with a decent average. But that's still, if he can keep that dual eligibility, that'd be fun, especially if it's just like second and third. So you can get that corner and middle infield as well, which obviously adds an extra little bit of value there to be able to kind of slot him in four spots in your lineup. That'd be pretty fun if he keeps that. We'll see. We'll see what the Cubs do with him long term. But yeah, I'm not hitting the panic button yet with Shaw. But yeah, definitely some concern though with the powers. Hopefully that can bounce back here, at least to close to what we saw from him in the minors. But that's gonna wrap us up. Mike, thanks always for coming on. Always appreciate chatting with you. What do you got going on? I know you're a busy guy these days. What do you got going on?
Well, my daughter just is going to college this year, which is crazy. So we're going to orientation at University of Illinois on Wednesday. So driving down there tomorrow night. But I write the bullpen stuff for Fantrax on Saturdays. And then at Rotoballer, I have three articles a week now. I do a little prospect write-up that comes out on Wednesday. I also have waiver wire pickups for offensive categories and waiver wires for starting pitchers that comes out on Saturday. So I've got enough to keep me busy during the summer. Work's a little less crazy in the summertime, so I'm able to do a little bit more writing. But, Eric, I always say this whenever we come on and whenever you have me on, you're always so gracious, and I appreciate that. Going back a long way, we've known each other for several years now, and you have made such a difference in my ability to be able to land places and get work in the industry. And I've always been really grateful to you for that. I know that you always poo-poo it, but you've always looked out for me. And when I was at Roto Fanatic and that dried up and was trying to get in someplace that would have me, and you got me in at Fantrax and you vouched for me. And then you did the same at Rotoballer. And I can't thank you enough for that. It means a lot to me as a person who kind of came to this a little bit later in life than a lot of you guys that are younger than me. And so I've always really appreciated your support and your friendship over the years now too. So always want to say thanks to you for that when you have me on. And when I have an opportunity to say thank you, I always want to.
I appreciate that, man. And yeah, I will always, go to bat for Mike Carter. I mean, again, you're someone I consider a friend, not just like someone I met on Twitter and we talk on Twitter. Like you and I chat, we'll text each other, how are the kids, what's going on?
Yeah.
And every now and then we just kind of check in with each other. So yeah, I definitely will always kind of vouch for you. You do great work. So it's easy to vouch from Mike. Obviously go check out all his stuff at Fantrax, at Rotoballer, the Fantasy Baseball Beat podcast, one of the best podcasts out there. I love listening to that when I can. So yeah, definitely check out Mike's stuff. And that's going to wrap us up. Hope everyone enjoyed it. This was a fun episode. And I'll be back with you again next week. But until then, everyone take care.
Breaking news, and this one is almost unbelievable.
Yeah, it's all about new customers at Bet365, because they get $150 in bonus bets when they bet $5, win or lose. And even better, bonus bets can be used on the spread, totals, and player props.
There you have it. Bet $5 to get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. And see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. T&Cs apply. Available in app only.